dissertation just now, you said accountant and billing company. Are they both the same, or we have two separate people as an accountant, and we have a separate billing company, or is this something together on this ambulance collection?
It's two things, and there's actually five pieces to it. There's administration, we do our part to maximize. The billing company does their part to maximize. The accountant makes sure that it, you know, that the books balance and that we, you know, that we have the money and they guide us. And then the auditor has the ability, you know, takes in and comes in and says, you know, audits it to make sure that we're doing everything legally and correctly. And then the collections agency where troubled debt eventually ends up. So there's really kind of five professional pieces that fit into the whole billing cycle.
That's on the ambulance side or on the fire side?
That's on the ambulance side, but the fire side has the accountant professional, or the accountant, the auditor, and administration.
Okay, does it show that there are costs anywhere in the budget?
There is. Under professional fees, account number 53920, it is, I don't know, about 15 lines down. Professional fees, $56,000. If you look over here, that is our legal, our accounting fees, and our audit fees. None of this reflects any ambulance collection to our billing company, because the billing company takes their fee out pre-deposit. So we get net revenue from them, and we never write them a check. I'm ready.
I wasn't sure. I was going to ask you, how far along on your start were you at? Because if you were close to being finished with that, I mean, then we could do the questioning instead of interjecting and breaking up train of thoughts.
I'll just say there's three options here. One, two, and three. One is option number one, which is taking the half FTE and increasing that to a full FTE. You can see that as with these revenue projections, and expense projections, we have a balanced budget with a $65,000 ish in the black. You go to item number two, or budget number two. You can see down there the variance is $238,940. This is everything that's on budget number one, plus three new people. Okay. And then budget number three is everything that's on budget number two plus merit increases. And that's the big kind of sticky discussion to have. We have a contract that we have a new increasing pay scale to get the department within, you know, plus or minus 5% of the market average. That was the commitment that we made. We have an 8% increase in base salary this year. That's reflected in all of these. However, there's actually two potential income increases or raises for the employees. The first is adjustment of the pay scale. Which is really kind of more termed a COLA, or a cost of living increase of the pay scale, adjustment of the base pay scale. The second is taking someone that's in that pay scale and moving them a merit step forward. So, for example, if I'm a new employee and I'm in step one, and theoretically, and this is where it gets tricky, because a lot of people try and interpret the steps as chronological years, but that is not correct. Theoretically, if I'm here and I accomplish all my stuff and I get my get a good evaluation and I'm not in trouble and I pass my year, theoretically I should move to step two. Well, to increase the scale and move everyone in a merit step is an additional $80,000. So you can see in budget three, we're $318,000 upside down in this budget. That's to go wage scale improvement and merit step, which essentially equates into anywhere from a 12 to a 15% raise per employee. The difference between budget number two and budget number three is budget number two is just a pay scale increase of 8%, no merit increase. The difficult discussion. No matter what, we're getting the crews are going to get raises. We're going to live by the contract of moving up to the next year number two scale. It's just whether or not we can afford to do year number two scale and give everyone a merit increase.
So, Chief, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
About the pay raises and the moving people up to the next step per the contract, and then you talk about...
There's nothing in the contract that talks about moving people to the next step.
Okay. Well, maybe I misheard you. You talk about moving everyone up and giving them the 8% pay raise, and then you talk about the merit increase. Is that in addition to what would be their next step, for lack of a better term, or is that like incentive type stuff? How does that break down exactly?
Can I use you as an example? Mm-hmm. Okay, Dan, you make $19.07 right now. You're at step number two in the paramedic scale. On year one, step number two, you're going to move with next budget year, you're going to move to year two of that scale, which is $21.14. I think I'm pulling it, ballparking it. Okay, that's if you stay in step two, you move to $21.14, ballparking. I don't have it in front of me. That additional merit step would be moving from step two to step three, which would be now $22.07 or something like that. So essentially, it would turn out to be 12%+ increase in 1 year to do a merit step and a pay scale adjustment. The pay scale adjustment is a given. It's going to happen.
That's in the contract. The 8% in the contract. Is that what that is?
What's that?
The 8% in the contract agreement, right?
Correct, yeah. We have a 3-year plan because we were 17 to 25% below market. Just woefully underpaid. We developed a 3-year graduated program that year one we'll do an 8% increase, year two we do an 8% increase, and year three I believe it's a 5% increase to get a total of a 21% increase over 3 years, which brings us into plus or minus 5% of what the market average is. The question is do we have the money to do a merit increase also?
Chief, I got a question.
Yeah.
If you don't mind. So is there numbers that would indicate what you're talking about as far as the new scale on top of the merit increases minus the three people?
That is Emory.
So...
Or that is budget number one.
So
budget number one is
one includes
merit and scale adjustment and bringing on one...
I took it as a... Things were staying status quo plus Emory kind of thing, not with the new scale plus the merit increase.
Oh,
plus
I got
Emory.
You. No,
Emory.
This is
okay.
this scale represents, and now I mean,
the current new scale.
I've crunched a lot of numbers. I have multiple spreadsheets that I would have to go back and look at. If you want to recess, I can go in and confirm. But I'm pretty sure that I confirmed it last night before I left work. Budget number one is everything that we have right now, 6 people on duty per day, with the wage scale increase, and merits.
Thank you.
You use the term merits, Chief. What exactly are we talking about when we talk merit? Is that a step increase?
A merit is a step increase. That is the technical term for a step increase, okay. Is a merit increase.
But we're not increasing people's wages annually based on merit. They're still based on step, or has that changed?
They're the same thing.
Okay.
But where the problem comes in is, and I was there myself. Hey, I got a 5-year scale. It's not a 5-year scale. It's a 5 merit step scale. Merit steps are never guaranteed. You know, how many places around here have had years where they don't get a merit increase? It happens. because they're not. I realize from a labor perspective, we look at it and we say, oh, that's a 5-year scale, but it's really not. It's not a 5-year scale. It's 5 steps to get to the end of the scale. Some places it takes 10 years to get to the end, to step 5. Some places it takes 5 years. It just depends on the dollars and cents of it.
Chief, I have another question.
Yes, sir.
I understand that by April 15th, the budget we propose has to be balanced. But I understand also that somewhere during the fiscal year, whether it's 3 months from now or 6 months, we can come back. If things seem to improve here, we can come back and we can do some adjustment for your budget.
That is correct. We can adjust. Typically, the typical adjustment is the mid-year adjustment. You get about 6 months behind you, and you can make those adjustments. But we have had a couple times where we've gone in and augmented the budget and had budget augmentations. That happens at least once, sometimes twice a year.
I'd like to have a better understanding so I can understand it better myself. The contract or the agreement is 8% this year, 8% next year, 5% the following. So what predicates a merit increase?
Number one is always
on top of a contractual agreement, a contractual.
Number one is always the money exists. Okay, we have to be able to fund it in order to have it. Two is that the employee has to have satisfactory performance evaluations. They're not heavily disciplined. They've met their requirements for time and grade, which is where a lot of the confusion comes in. Oh, I've been here a year. That's one more step. Now I'm in my second year. So that's it, basically. Non-disciplinary, favorable performance evaluation, and time and grade. And last but not least, the ability to fund those raises.
Thank you.
So I have a question.
Yes, sir.
So pretty much the large increase on budget 2 is 3 new people?
Correct.
And that's the big cost factor.
It is. Okay. That's, and how that would work, and it's, and I have it factored in here, so it's that would be 3 existing employees, ideally promoted to captain, and 3 new employees brought in at entry level to replace those 3 promotions, so that we can have 3 people out at 62 with a supervisor. Because right now we have 2 out there. The 3 additional people gets us 3 people out there, which allows us to have a lot more flexibility in our responses, and gets them the supervision that they don't have right now. Okay. Right now the captain here is doing double duty, is supervising both stations. And we just can't, that's just not sustainable in the long run.
So the nuts and bolts, we're looking for money for 3 new people.
Yeah. But I have an idea. Go ahead, please.
I just for more of my own clarification, because of my experience with past union contracts, clearly not in this industry. Does every new contract generally include an increase in wages for each year?
No. We did a 3-year contract. Typically in the past it had been a year-to-year contract. We did a 3-year contract with these larger increases to get to where we needed to be within the marketplace. Now, every year there may be, in a year-to-year contract, there may be an increase or not. It just depends on what the marketplace looks like then, if you're doing it correctly,
okay.
What the marketplace looks like then and the ability to fund those raises.
Okay.
So many contracts can maintain the same wage scale for multiple years and fund merit increases.
Right.
And then once every 5 years, do a COLA or a wage scale adjustment.
Okay, thank you.
I'm just trying to figure out how to do both,
no,
really.
I just want to make sure I've got a proper understanding.
Chief, got a question. The station 61, we're running 4 people per day.
That is correct.
And then how many captains? Is there 1 captain on duty per day?
1.
He's supervising 3 people?
3 people here and 2 people out at station 62.
Okay.
you back a little more question.
Yes, sir.
Just merely for clarification, I guess. So if we were to hire 3 new people and promote out there at 62 and say, being that it's an odd number, 3 people out there, and that rescue goes to town, what service does the person provide over there for the 2 hours that those guys are gone? Because over here we have obviously an even number amount of people, so you can always carry a second, another ambulance, you can always staff a fire engine. Over there they seemingly become stagnant, I guess. So what service in the gap is being accomplished by having, I guess, a third out there is...
Well, the target is to have 5 out there.
Right. No,
and the target is to have 5 here.
I definitely agree with the target. I guess
so. It's a matter of that incremental growth into it. I agree with you. You know, the ambulance crew goes out. The captain, what's the captain doing? Well, ideally, maybe the captain goes with the ambulance. I don't know. Maybe there's 3 people that respond on the rescue. I don't know. That's getting into your job as a captain to run your shift. You know, I try to stay out of that. What it does though is it allows that captain that may be on the engine to respond single-handedly as BLS response, or what will be ILS. We had this conversation about outfitting the engines to be ILS first response engines. It gets care to the scene in 62's area faster, because that engine's going to be there 5, 6, 7 minutes faster than the ambulance that's coming out of here. That's the whole point. Now, yes, it would be great to be able to have 2 out there. We just applied for SAFER. All we could do is cross our fingers.
Can we discuss that a little bit more to give some clarity of what that potential is in that application?
Okay, let me finish. The other thing is that gives us that one more person when we're totally tapped out, when 61, 62, and 63 are all gone, okay? Tim, Steve, and I are the only ones that are left. And oftentimes that isn't the case. Having one more operational person is someone that we can, in that sort of an instant, put on a 4th ambulance with Tim or with Steve. You know, obviously not me, because, you know, you don't want me driving anymore. But no, you see what I'm saying? So it's just that incremental approach. 2 would be optimal, but we got to start somewhere. And I think we can afford 3. It may feel like a third wheel for a little bit, but it's a third wheel until we get the SAFER grant. Or until next year, where maybe revenues are better and we can hire 3 more.
Would it behoove us, I guess, and to play devil's advocate somewhat too, would it behoove us, because the call volume seems to be split unevenly, obviously. 61 takes, you know, roughly, I'd say 70% of the calls probably, and the other districts, 30% of the calls. Start by increasing the staffing perhaps over here, maybe put another person over here, and then you still have somebody that can come off that engine and run that second ambulance out of here with the other person, and we have Steve, Tim, or something to still staff a fire engine.
You're not the first person to bring this up. Everyone wants the other person here because of call volume, and I hear that all the time.
Right.
Oh, we're just too busy.
Well, we have the other ambulance out here, too.
But that may not be the case for long. That second ambulance may end up going over to 62. I don't know. I'm still working on that. To not sugarcoat it, no. No, we have a station that only has 2 people, and we have an area of the town that is only covered by 2 people right now. The risk is higher there. Call volume is a non-starter for me. The disparity between call volume between 62 and 63, that's unfortunately you just don't get anywhere with me on that. And
I'm more thinking of the availability of people.
I understand that, but they need supervision out there. It's too hard for you to adequately supervise the crew at 62 and the crew here. I need supervision out there. As we grow and as we get more higher risk development out there, which is coming, that's where the staffing needs to come. And then as we can grow, maybe the following year, if we get another person here, then we get four people at 62. Now we have a housing problem. And then we get five people at 61. And then we get five people at 62. Again, still with a housing problem, but we're going to have to incrementally grow on this. And it is my assessment that the place where we need it most right now, because of risk, you know, risk level, is at 62.
Chief.
I respect that you guys are busy. I know. But for me, it's just...
Yeah, we don't mind the call volume. I mean, we don't care. We'll run all day. We're here for 48 hours. We're here to work. And
right.
We'll get it done.
I know.
I'm just merely thinking on the availability of, you know, resource, apparatus, what's here, what's... You know,
and those are operational.
If you're sitting out there by yourself, or you have you or Tim or Steve to be able to hop on that rig with them, now you've got
A
dually staffed piece of apparatus.
And those are operational things that are outside of the budget that we can discuss further. Yes, sir.
What's the cost difference between, say, promotions and people? Instead of promoting captains, would that save some money and allow us to stay within our span of control to, say, get a second person out there instead of just one, so they have a total of four, and not promote captains?
No, it's really only about $36,000 to promote three captains. The lion's share of that is the cost. Roughly $110,000 for an entry-level firefighter or entry-level paramedic with wages and benefits, and so that's where the majority of it is. I mean, and there's been discussion about trying to figure out other ways to do company officers out there, but as of yet, I haven't had a suggestion that really can formally be put into practice reasonably. Lieutenants have been bantered around, but we're just, I don't know that I'm prepared to create a company officer position that's going to be doing the exact same thing as a captain does and pay him less. You know, that's going to create all sorts of other problems.
Hey, Chief, I have a question.
Yes,
about
sir.
The safer stuff. How many are we looking at putting in for as far as the safer goes? How many?
I applied for six.
Six, okay. And just out of curiosity, we all know the safer kind of prorates itself down more or less. And maybe you'll get to this, I'm not sure. But how are we looking at being able to continue to fund those positions through the life of the grant so that come year five, they're not like, hey, it's your guys' turn to fund this, and sorry, here's a bunch of layoffs. Do we have anything in place? Are there any thoughts thrown around about that?
Yes. I'm really, yes. I can't get into that strategy. It is too. It's not clear enough yet to really bring into a formal setting. But yes, that is something that I work on almost every day. And as it becomes more clear, that information will come out. If I say something now, chances are it's going to change, and I don't want to handcuff myself 2 years in the future.
So with that added, we're not going to count on just growth to do this.
No.
Okay.
We can't.
Yeah, I know that the city made that mistake with the water treatment plant.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in the same boat.
There are some massive undertakings that are going to have to happen to ensure our long-term sustainability, and that's massive undertakings. That's the best I can say.
But that's not going to happen within this budget cycle either.
No.
So
we laid the foundation, but those are political changes.
Yeah.
They're not budgetary changes. Those are fundamentally political changes for the district that have to be made, and that's just not the that's not the direction that this discussion can go right now.
Chief, at this current monies we have left out of this budget here, we can see, clearly see some of these things won't be accomplished. And I wish they could. I wish I had a money tree out back to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the things that you would basically ask, what's the bottom line of what you're asking for in this budget, what we'd like to see?
Okay. I think that we can do budget number two. I think we can. Obviously, there's still several weeks before we pass the final budget, but I think that this is a good starting point. It gets us the additional supervision at Station 62. But there's some risk involved in this. I'm just going to stand up for a second. I've been sitting down for a while. There's some risk involved in it. First off is that I talked with Dave this morning. I'm kind of anticipating having, even though we're going to go over budget, because of the $520,000 that we received in CARES money from the city and the county, I think that we will have an additional roundabout $200,000, maybe $250,000 at the end of the year, where our revenue, because that was $520,000 of unanticipated revenue. I think we'll have this money. Now, if you look on these budgets, they're kind of the olive green are line items that I wanted to highlight. The first two that I want to talk about is line number 83100 and 8100, the lease payments and depreciation. In total, that's $267,000. Well, we know that lease payment has to be cash in the bank because they want to cash the check to pay for the engines. The depreciation, on the other hand, has honestly usually been paper, the depreciation on paper, not funded depreciation. I'm fundamentally opposed to paper depreciation because it looks good because you're depreciating, but when you have to replace your apparatus, you don't have the money for it. You have to fund depreciation. What I think is a sound strategy for this coming up year is to, first off, not depreciate the engines this year. Now, I have in there $85,000 for depreciation of the engines, okay, under the fire line item. They're brand new, and we are on a seven-year payment plan with them. Now, we expect a minimum of 10 years of frontline service out of them. So, if we plan on 7 years of $147,000 each year, that ends year seven, which gives us, because we made one initial payment up front, so we made a payment at year zero, that gives us year seven, eight, nine, and 10. That gives us 4 years where the engines are completely paid for. If we don't depreciate this year, and we start next year with modest depreciation, and every year moving up, we say we increase that depreciation by maybe 10%. Say we start out, not this year, but next year with $50,000, and then the following year we do $55,000. By the time we get to the end of those 4 years, we should have about $200,000 in funded depreciation. But we still have 4 years left where they should be on in frontline service. So we carry the lease payment or the engine payment forward, now not as engine payment, but now we maximize that depreciation because we've already proven that we can make that $147,000 payment. Now we just switch it from lease payment into depreciation, and we have 4 years of depreciation there, which gives us $600,000. And if we've depreciated this, leaving this year out, and we've gradually depreciated a little bit, 10% more every year, gives us $200,000. Now we're looking at the end of 10 years. We're looking at $800,000 depreciated for the engines. And it really has not hurt as much because we've just continued this, instead of ending the payments, we've continued them on for 10 years, which I think financially we could do. Gives us $800,000. These engines in year 10 will be $800,000. It will still depreciate the value of what it's going to cost to replace. Now we only can only replace one. So we depreciate one of them at 10 years, and then we do our best, thank you Josh, to depreciate the other one at 15 years. So now we have 5 years of making this $147,000 payment on top of that, which will get us enough money, essentially enough money, to purchase a replacement engine at year 15. So we're turning our lease payment into our depreciation payment for the foreseeable future. I think it's a sound strategy. It takes out $85,000 out of this current budget year, and we pay the $147,000 next year out of the budget overage as a one-time capital expense. So now that $147,000 for the lease payment for this coming up year coincides with a GL revenue account that comes out of the fund balance from our excess that we have this year, which, if it all works out, makes a $147,000 payment and ideally still has $100,000 going into fund balance because we need to keep that going also. Does that strategy make, I mean, does it, how does that sound to you? Now I can sit down again because I, now
sounds
I'm
like,
tired
sounds
of
like
standing
we're pulling
up.
Pulling a second on a house to pay for something now and then pay it back later. So Chief, I like it because it generates revenue, but we're going back and doing the thing that you said we didn't want to do anymore, not depreciating vehicles, which we should do. And we have plans, we've drafted up plans before.
Right.
Over, you know, how we want to pay for vehicles because we've never done it.
Right.
There was no front load. I'd hate to see the department in that position again. We're driving around in open cabs, stick shifts that we, you know, basically stole from Tahoe Douglas again. So I don't know if playing with that depreciation is a fantastic way. We have that 250. I came up with 270 based on, I don't know what numbers we got from this, but 520 total in CARES minus a 250 from the I think that was the impact we anticipate for this
right.
year, 250. 270 was what I came up with for a remainder. We could front that, I would imagine, somehow. We can pump that into the depreciation ahead of time and front load it, and then it opens up 270 somewhere else, but we still have that 270 that's going to be one time. And then as far as recurring, I don't see, if this was good years, if these were steady years, I'd be happy with it. But we don't know what's going to happen when this moratorium lifts and how that's going to impact. Is it reasonable to, you know, to be on the safe side and say we might lose $200,000-$300,000 out of our budget because of that? Who knows who's going to hold on to their houses? We're seeing housing starting to plateau. There's a lot of volume that's gone now, and people are having trouble selling. I think the thought was, hey, we've got so much volume now out here in houses, or such a lack of, we can jack the rates up on our houses and we can make off because now it's a total seller's market. That's plateauing. People are sitting on the market now with houses now for a few months. We've been looking at buying.
I'm not seeing anyone sitting on any house. For
yeah,
two days.
I'm not either.
People
not
are jacked because people are seeing the rates go up. They're seeing the
still
housing.
Not happening. I'm in contact with real estate agents every day. It is not happening.
Yeah.
There right now was like 14 houses total available here in Fernley. You put them on the market and they're gone just like that.
Not only they're gone, there's
no
bidding war going on.
And totally. There's bidding wars. There's no one's waiting 2 months to sell a house here.
Sure, but you're seeing the prices now because of that absolute seller's market. People are starting to jack. We've been looking at houses.
They're trying. But the problem with that is you can sell your house like that. They're going to try and spend money and buy another house.
Sure.
They're just not, it's just not happening that way.
I think we're on the precipice, too. I think we're going to see a little bit of a dip coming.
I also think it's very sound. I mean, if we're trying to find money and we need to maneuver money from one line to another to make sure we get what we need to get, that's a sound business decision.
Depreciation can be turned into a capital, well, it is a capital expense, but it can be turned into a formal capital expense very easily, and capital expenses can be covered by one-time money. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about. This year, just this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we as a group would have to have this understanding that next year's depreciation is probably going to be $50,000. The year after that will be $55,000. Mm-hmm. And then so on and so forth. Director McCaffrey, yes.
A life plan. I did have a question about, you basically highlighted the fire 85, but didn't talk about the ambulance. Is that...
We can't not depreciate the ambulances.
Okay.
The realistic lifespan on those, on even our new ones, is 4 years. They started their walk to their death sentence the day that we got them here. And we have to be able to do that. And even we should be depreciating them at $85,000. We just can't afford it this year. So that's the $35,000 just to start with. Yeah.
I wouldn't be concerned. I would be concerned if the trucks weren't new.
Right.
And so that's, I mean, their brand's been in there. So.
That's why I think we have kind of this 1 year of luck. It's a gimme this year. We could not depreciate them this year. Start depreciation in year two, which really, from an accounting standpoint, is a sound principle, is not depreciating in year one. You know, so, I mean, it works on both levels. But it still gives us a little bit more wiggle room, you know, because now we're talking, if we take the $85,000 out and we take the $147,000 out, now we're $220,000 or $230,000, and our red figure down here to make this work is $238,000. So now, plus or minus 10% is a balanced budget. Or plus or minus $10,000 in this budget, we can balance that, okay? But that doesn't satisfy any of our new needs, which is kind of the next point of discussion. So to kind of wrap this up, my suggestion to the board is that we do not depreciate the engines this year. We wait until we find out exactly what our overage will be, and we'll crunch those numbers. We'll have Dave working on it, and Casey and I will work on it over the course of the next week. By next board meeting, I think we'll have an idea as to maybe it's not $270,000. Maybe it's only $50,000. We just don't know right now. But if it is $200,000, now we've bridged that gap. And I think that the depreciation strategy is sound accounting, sound planning, and like you said, I think it's a good business decision moving forward. So, what's that, sir?
I will support you on that.
So, that's depreciation. And a rollover of overage from this current fiscal year because of that $520,000 into next year, whatever that is that we may, you know, whatever that ends up looking like. It may not look like anything if we don't get paid by Cal Fire before June 30th.
Sure.
It may not even exist, you know. So, yes, Dan.
Does Cal Fire have a clock that they're on where they can't go into overtime where they have to get that money out? Or is it just that machine is running this thing? Okay.
I think some of the discussion also is, because it's not just us with paperwork that are not being paid. There's a lot of places that aren't being paid.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the what I'm hearing in our chief circles discussions is Cal OES was also charged with the COVID response. Well, Cal OES is who pays the fire bills also. And California has done a lot with the COVID out of the same agency. I don't know if they robbed Peter to pay Paul, but we're not the only ones having payment issues.
It can take up to a year.
Yeah. from hard experience, huh? So
is the board going to move forward on budget number two?
I think we can make it work. That is a wage scale increase with no merit increases. I don't believe that we have the additional $80,000 for a wage scale increase and merit increases. And I know I'm going to get roasted, you know, but if I'm going to, if we're going to fund something, I think that that's what, I think that's what we fund. The community risk of only having two firefighters out at 62, we just can't continue that.
Well, not only that, but it's the beginning of the start to build Station 62.
Right. Now that said, there's still some things that we need. So if you look on the notes column, actually, if we can we take a 10-minute break?
Yeah, 10-minute recess.
Just remember the recording is still on, so if you need to talk, go out there.